Welcome, everyone, to a new installment of MP Access. My name is David Wharton. I'm the editor-in-chief of Mortgage Point Magazine and the Five Star Institute. We've got today a new conversation with an exciting guest. We are speaking today to Hector Amendola, who is the president of Panorama Mortgage Group. Hector, welcome to the line, and thank you for talking to us.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, David. I'm happy to be here. Excited to have this conversation.
Well, to get started, could you tell us a little bit about just how you joined the industry, what's your background, and what was the path that took you to your current role there at Panorama?
Absolutely. So I've been in the mortgage industry for a little bit over 20 years. I started as loan officer assistant for a good producing loan officer out in California. And I worked my way from there. I processed for a little bit. I've been in a lot of different departments. During the crisis, if you will, 2008, I said, this is a good time to become a loan officer. And I became a loan officer, and I kind of grew from there. And so I've had a lot of different roles. Went into management around 2015 or so, and became president of Panorama Mortgage Group a couple of years ago.
Well, I know one of the big topics that that kind of spurred this interview was builder confidence and just kind of what's going on with the market. Obviously, one of the big reports that we cover all the time that I know is kind of a benchmark for the industry is the NAHB Wells Fargo Housing Market Index. From your perspective, what are the metrics that are involved there that help give kind of the best insights into that builder sentiment overall?
I think the sentiment overall is we're looking at the numbers that show just what our buyers thinking right now, right? And what type of foot traffic are they having right now with the builders? And I think what we've seen is that the sentiment's been not so great the last couple of years. I think it has a lot to do with a lot of different factors. You know, primarily everybody's always talking about interest rates, obviously. And so we focus a lot on that. But I think it has a lot to do with price point too and affordability in general, right? So, you know, we're looking at a lot of different factors when it comes to that and making sure that we're staying on top of all the numbers. And right now it looks like in 2026, sentiment's getting a little bit better. People have a little bit of a brighter outlook than they have the last couple of years. So we're excited about that.
There's kind of a number of factors that you mentioned there that may be boosting that confidence. Is there anything else that you think is driving buyers slowly starting to re-enter the marketplace? I know we've seen a little bit of shift on rates, but what do you think is really driving buyer decisions right now?
I think there's a lot of things, actually. It's interesting how the psychology of buying a home works. When rates first go up, you know, I think a lot of people just get out of the market altogether and decide, you know, this is not the time for me. I'm going to time this better. And you know, in my opinion, at least, has been a pretty bad decision for a lot of folks over the last couple of years, because the expectation was rates went up, prices will come down. And that really hasn't happened. I think last year we started to see a little bit of a decline in some markets, but for the most part, it really hasn't happened yet. Right. And so, you know, we're still seeing rates in the sixes and the prices actually continue to rise for the most part. So for the better part of the last 3 years, I'll say. And so I think what's happening now and what's changing that dynamic is, you know, at some point you just kind of have to get off the fence, right? And decide I'm going to become a homeowner, right? I struggle a lot with the folks that say renting is better right now. And I get that they have valid points, and I'm not trying to say that they're not valid, but I struggle with it because I think that, you know, one of the biggest things, and something that actually me and my team are working on right now, is putting some numbers together for this. But one of the things that, you know, we see is the delay in buying a house. And, you know, some of these numbers that came out in the last couple of years, that the average age of buying a home, you know, has gone up in the last few years. That causes long-term effects on people's ability to build wealth, right? For a lot of folks, buying a house is the number one source of building wealth. And so, you know, when you look at it that way, you go, now I lost 3 years in that. I lost 3 years of paying down my principal. I lost 3 years of it gaining equity. I lost 3 years of a lot of different things. It starts to take quite its toll. So a big part of it, I think, is simply saying it's time to stop trying to time the market and actually buy a home, which is something that, as a loan officer, when I was a loan officer, I talk about that a lot to my clients, is you cannot look at buying a home as your next investment. I get that for a lot of folks, it's their biggest investment, but it can't be looked at in that sense, because then you start thinking about timing. What if the price goes down, et cetera, et cetera? How about we just focus on, can we make the payment? Is it affordable for us? And Will it build wealth over time because of that? The answer is always going to be yes. Even the folks that bought, 2009, 2010, when, we still saw prices go down, those folks are sitting on a nice pile of equity today.
Yeah, it feels like the market and a lot of buyers still haven't kind of gotten past that black swan event of the pandemic and all of the disruption that happened there, and everyone's still kind of waiting for things to drop that may not be happening anytime soon. So, how do you foresee the fall buying season shaping up compared to the last couple of years? Do you see any movement there, positive, negative?
So we're seeing a lot of positive trends right now. We've seen them for the last couple of months. Now, October we had a little bit of a dip in interest rates, and we saw that, it's there's no doubt that interest rates drive demand for housing, right? There's no doubt, and we can see it if just a small shift, and all of a sudden the average rate goes from 6.7 to 6.3. You see the shift, right? You see more people suddenly, start making offers on homes, and you see the numbers go up. And in the fall we saw an increase in applications, which is not normal, right? We saw an increase in applications in November, which is not normal. And then we saw an increase in applications and closings in December, which is also not normal. You normally see those numbers really go down at that time, and I think that had a lot to do with just what rates are doing and where they drive. And now we're seeing, with the announcement last week that President Trump is asking the GSEs to buy mortgage-backed securities, we're seeing a little bit more of a surge right now. So, I think that, it's an interesting time because normally, in the mortgage industry, we're looking at, slow seasons versus hot seasons, and right now it's just dependent so much on rate that, you can have a hot season at any point in time.
Well, I wanted to touch on that, what you just mentioned, President Trump's proposal to have the GSEs ramp up buying more of those mortgage-backed securities. What do you think is going to be the near and long-term impact of that? Do you think it's really going to move the needle? Do you think it's a positive change? What do you anticipate from that?
I think it's already moving the needle a little bit. I
Yeah.
don't anticipate that it'll be a long-term move, though. What we're seeing is the closing of the spread between the average rate and the yield and the 10-year yield, right? And so that spread is closing. We're not necessarily seeing a big decline in the 10-year just yet. And so it'll be interesting to see how that how all that starts to come about in the next couple of weeks, the next couple of months. But I think what we're already seeing is a little bit of reprieve, and we're seeing some lower interest rates. But I don't anticipate that this will be that one thing that long term turns rates around and suddenly we start seeing fours or fives anytime soon. I think that what everybody is what I'm seeing is most people are still predicting that we're in the sixes next year, and I mean this year I should say, now 2026, and I expect a lot of the same.
Well, you have talked about builders being better able to compete and more effectively when they're able to secure lending products that provide both savings and incentives. Can you break down what sort of financing tools or programs you're seeing that are really having a positive impact right now?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing that a builder can provide for their buyers is a little bit of cost certainty, and so that's the biggest thing, right? So you're looking at the builders are building these homes, and they have a price set for it, and their margins have to be their margins, right? There's really no way around that. We already spent X amount on it, so we have to make sure that we make what we have to make on it. And so how you I guess there's no better word for it, how you incentivize a buyer to say, this is a house for you, is a program like the 3-2-1 buy down that's pretty popular right now, right? Where you lock in the payment for the first, 1 to 3 years, and it helps kind of wages catch up a little bit. It helps you get into the home, and there's a lot of different options that could come up about the next couple of years. The expectation is that rates will come down eventually in the next couple of years, and so you can also put together a clear path for a refinance. When you do that, I think what we've seen with incentives also is, free upgrades or more upgrades at a lower cost. And I think that's a big deal when it comes to builders, because, if you've ever toured a model home, you see that this model home is beautiful. Oh yeah, but it has this upgrade and this upgrade and this upgrade and this upgrade. And I know the starting price is, 500,000, but this one's going to be about 800,000 with all those upgrades. And suddenly you start seeing the big difference there. So incentivizing them by doing some of these upgrades at a lower cost, I think, is a big deal too.
With mortgage rates, like we mentioned, still above 6% and seeming to likely stay in that range, at least for the near term, Affordability, you know, that's a big buzzword. Everybody's throwing that out, whether it's from home pricing, just, you know, everything is expensive right now. So you mentioned, you know, people feeling the need to maybe rent longer. So from your perspective, how do you and your teams navigate conversation with people who are interested in buying, they want to own a home, but they're feeling that pressure, they're feeling priced out? What do those conversations look like?
I think it's, you know, what we preach is what I practice as a loan officer and what a lot of us have done as a loan officer over the years. I think, you know, I spent a lot of my years serving the underserved communities. And in doing so, you do get a lot of folks that are worried about affordability, even when rates are low, right? I mean, and sure, let's face it, you're buying probably the biggest purchase of your life. Everybody's worried about, am I going to be able to afford this? Can I not afford this? I still remember when I bought my first house, one of the best pieces of advice I got from a realtor that I used to work with was, you're always going to be nervous about this purchase. So kind of try to put that to the side and just focus on, you know, can you get approved? Can you get the home? Because the nervousness doesn't go away. And that's true even to this day, right? If you buy another house today, you're still wondering, can I make the payment? So I think affordability is always top of mind for a lot of folks. But what we have to focus on really, and what I try to get people to focus on is the payment. Is that payment something that you can make without stressing yourself, without killing yourself? Can you truly afford this payment? Forget the interest rate, because interest rates come and go, right? There's an opportunity later on to refinance, to do different things, to bring that payment down. You know, if you have mortgage insurance, there's an opportunity down the road to get rid of that mortgage insurance, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many opportunities down the road, but can this payment make sense for you? Can you make it work? And if the answer is yes, then get in right now, because trying to time it is, as I said earlier, has been proven to be a bad strategy for a lot of folks the last couple of years. And right, getting in right now, you have more options. You might get some, you know, some incentives from a builder, incentives from a traditional seller. You have a lot of different, you might get an option into a house that has the perfect house that you want with the perfect lot, where before you might have a ton of competition for that house. There's so many different factors that play into it. And markets like this are when you can find the home that you truly want and truly love. And so there's just a lot of different factors that I say, let's focus on this and not worry about the rates, because rates change every day.
Are there certain segments of buyers that you're seeing react differently to this current rate environment? Are you seeing anything with first-time buyers or move-up buyers, multi-generational households? What are the trends you're seeing unfolding right now?
Yeah, no, definitely the first-time home buyers are the ones that are the most concerned about it. They're most payment sensitive, I think. A move-up buyer is a little bit less sensitive to the payment because they're used to it, and they might have a little bit of equity in their old home to put some down payment and or buy the rate down or do different things. And so they're more focused on timing the transition or protecting their equity. Whereas, you know, investors are rate aware and really focused on, is this a good investor or not? And probably the fastest to go, this is not the one for me. Whereas, you know, first time home buyer, you know, a big part of doing loans for first time home buyers is focusing on coaching them really through, this is a tough decision, it's a hard decision, but I'm here for you. I've done it before. I have a lot of people there. I've helped people and I've gotten them from first time home buyer to now they're on their third or fourth house. And this is part of that transition, and they were nervous, just like you're nervous, et cetera, right? And really making sure that they understand that what they're going through isn't out of the ordinary.
Well, you've talked a little bit about people that are kind of hunkering down and just waiting for prices to drop, rates to drop, and all this, and pushing them towards just making that decision. So, what does that math look like for most buyers as far as determining whether it really does make sense to wait and see a little bit longer, or whether it's just about kind of what you mentioned? Can I afford it? Is it realistic? Is this the house for me? How do you find that balance when you're consulting with people like this?
I think it's different for everybody. And it really is a question where you have to, you know, it's funny. I just remembered this story early on in my career as a loan officer, and I'm talking about nearly 20 years ago now, maybe 18 years ago or so. I remember I said to a consumer in front of their real estate agent at the time, do you feel comfortable with this payment? And when the consultation was over, the realtor came to me and said, don't ever ask that question again. And I thought, that's interesting, because I really want to make sure they're comfortable with this payment for a lot of different reasons. Why? Right? Number one is I always want return clients. I want them to come back to me and say, this guy was honest and he was good. And he focused on that, and he focused on me, and not necessarily focusing on making the sale, which is a big distinction between a lot of loan officers. And so The question about, what makes a difference is really different for everyone, and it's really about them and how they feel about it to an extent. There is a little bit of, I understand what you're saying. This is more than you've ever paid before, but you can afford it. The numbers say you can afford it. Your debt to income ratio is this, and I'm doing loans that debt to income ratio is much higher. And so it's about getting comfortable with that part also and making sure that they understand that they're in a good place to be able to afford it. But I think it's just a real honest conversation about where they are. What sometimes you have somebody with a high debt to income ratio that has gig work that we're not taking into account, or they have other sources, or another family in the house member in the house works that we're not using that income or whatever. So there's so many different scenarios for different people. At the end of the day, it's about serving them and making sure that they understand that we're here to say, is this good for you? Does it work for you? And if it does, I'll do everything in my power to help you get that loan.
Could you talk a little bit about what a successful collaborative relationship looks like between builders and lenders right now? There's a lot of factors in going on in the industry right now, but what is a good version of that look like right now?
I think I'll focus on relationships with referral partners overall, if that's okay with you, David. I think that it's an interesting thing, and I'll talk a little bit about the psychology of being a loan officer, because I heard a loan officer once, and I never, for some reason I'm still picturing him right now. It never got out of my mind that when he said, "You're only as good as your last loan as a loan officer," and I think that's a real psychology that a lot of loan officers live with, and it's a rough way to go about your business, but it's a reality. The truth is that, getting a home loan could be rough for some folks, right? And you could say yes to a loan that you know is going to be difficult, and now you have a uphill climb in front of you of getting that loan closed, and you're dealing with the psychology of understanding that maybe the loan officer down the street could get this loan done if you can't get it done, and suddenly, that referral partner is saying, "Hey, this person got the loan done that Hector couldn't get done. And now I think that they're better. And so let's refer all our clients to them," et cetera, et cetera. I think it's no different when it comes to builders. I think that what we're looking at is, can the loan officer perform? And if so, they're going to get a lot of business. If for whatever reason they can't, then they're not going to get a lot of business. And you're looking at, can we get these transactions closed? Can you do what you promised me you were going to be able to do? And you have to be able to fulfill that. From the, were you asking in that sense, David, or are you talking more about JV type relationships?
I think we had a question about JV that was kind of next on the thing. So I think that was a totally valid response. But if you want to kind of touch on that aspect of it as well, that's one of the next questions. So.
So, when we talk about joint ventures with builders and different transactions like that, I think that those take a little bit of a life of its own, right? Joint ventures are, the key word in a joint venture is the word joint. And that's difficult for a lot of folks. I've been in joint ventures before. I haven't done a joint venture with the builder, but I've done joint ventures with real estate companies before. And sometimes it's difficult for both sides to see the whole picture, because, you take a real estate broker, for example. They work hard, they do a lot of great things, and they're out in the communities and they're serving folks. But they don't know that, the GSEs have certain regulations that we need to apply by, that we have CFPB, that we have, Ginnie Mae, and that we're servicing loans, and there's a lot of stuff that we have to do for that. There's so many different parts of the industry that sometimes they don't see. And so we say, okay, we have a joint venture now that requires capital from both sides. And let's go ahead and put that capital in the middle of the table and say, what's what we're going to do? And sometimes that's enough to get them to freeze and go, wait a minute, you're the bank, right? You're the mortgage banker. You're the bank. Why am I doing this? And that's what a joint venture really truly requires, is capital on both sides. And I think that that's difficult for a lot of folks to kind of comprehend. And, I think builders are no different. You're going to see some that understand it, and they're going to jump in, and they're going to say, this is a partnership. And you're going to see some that don't. What we've seen historically, and that's that they're very, you need a very level headed and the right individual to partner with, or corporation to partner with, because they have to have the right frame of mind to move into this, because the mortgage industry, not everybody has the stomach for it.
Beyond affordability, I'd say one of the other big kind of buzzword topics that we've seen, honestly, as long as I've been in this industry, is inventory and shortages and how that's keeping up or not keeping up with demand. So, what are you seeing as far as inventory challenges? Are you seeing any improvement? Are you seeing, and if we're still in kind of the same quagmire of it not keeping up with demand, do you see anything, any light at the end of the tunnel? Do you see any positive changes on that front?
I think what we've seen is a lot of improvement on that front. In some markets, we're back to 2019 levels. Or inventory is one of my biggest things, actually, that I focus on right now. I think that, you know, I don't have a very popular opinion with other mortgage professionals, and that my opinion is that I hope rates stay higher a little bit longer. And I know that people don't like to hear that, but there's a good reason behind it. I think I don't remember the exact numbers, but I know I just saw a realtor.com article that said that wages would have to go up 50%+ to catch up with being able to afford a home. Rates would have to be below 3%. And I think home prices would have to come down like 30%. And so there's a lot of different ways that, you know, affordability is impacted because of all these numbers. And if rates come down, first thing that's going to happen, in my opinion, is buyers are going to run to the market. They're going to want to buy. Now is the time. I've been waiting 2, 3, 4, however long I've been waiting to buy a house. This is my time. I'm going to jump in. I'm going to buy a house. They're going to flood the market. What happens when you flood the market? It's easy. Supply, demand. Prices are going to go up, and it's going to get a little bit even more out of hand in terms of affordability. And so I've been one of the folks that's been out there saying, I hope rates stay here a little bit longer, just so wages can catch up a little bit, or maybe prices can drop just a tad so it can become more affordable. Again, I'm on, you know, the different social media platforms. I see, you know, our counterparts and our colleagues kind of saying like, no, we want rates down. We want real rates today. And I get it. I understand that this is a driver for their businesses. I just think the overall health of the housing market is affected by that. And I think it has everything to do with your question, which is what happens to inventory if, you know, where we're at. I think we're in a better place than we have been over the last couple of years. It's continuing to improve. But if rates come down, it's going to take a hit right away.
Are there certain markets or segments of the market that you're expecting to see either heat up or cool off as we move into the new year?
I think what we've seen already, like the markets like Austin and you know, markets in Florida and even here in Las Vegas where I live, you've seen these markets cool off already over the last year. I think that last year we had a decline in prices for the first time here in Las Vegas, which, you know, hadn't happened in a long time. Now there's an expectation of right around break even in 2026. And so, you know, we'll see how that holds. I think that'll, again, fully depend on where interest rates go. And then, you know, again, the administration is talking a lot about, you know, different ways of reforming housing right now. So it'll be interesting to see what type of news comes out of there, where, you know, if suddenly we start seeing more incentives and whatnot, you might see more people jump into the market. But yeah, I think those are the markets that stand out to me the most. I know that we have a lot of loan officers in California, and that market's been a little bit slower. Makes sense with the price points that are out there, right? Price point plus interest rate is really what makes up your payment, and not to mention, you know, insurance and all the other factors that affect the monthly payment.
Are you seeing, insurance is another one that's been a big topic of people struggling with that. Are you seeing a lot of instances where you're having to have that conversation more proactively and make sure people are accounting for that and they're thinking that? Or are you getting questions of people who are like, oh, I saw a news story about insurance, so do I need to be stressed about that?
So we're a national company. So it really depends on where our loan officers are, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, again, markets like Florida and California, it's just, you know, in some areas, it's just difficult to get insurance, and you might only have one or two providers that'll do it for you. Maybe not so funny story is I actually got a quote for a home insurance on my home the other day, and they said, oh, we don't insure there. Okay, that was weird. I've never had a problem getting this house insured before. Like, that was, you know, that was weird. And so I think that a lot of people are going through that because insurance companies are weighing their own risk. And, you know, is this a market that we want to be in, or is it not a market? I went into research, and it turns out only two providers cover the area that I'm at. And so they're not one of them. And so I have to find one of those two providers. But that's kind of what I'm getting at, right? When that happens, then, you know, this is, you know, the competition drives, you know, price. And if there's no competition, where's price going to go? It's going to go up, right? And not to mention, of course, you know, the disasters in California and all the other stuff that's happened over the last couple of years. I think it all impacts the pricing there. So, yeah, I think that, you know, where before, at least when I was a loan officer, we used to go, well, maybe we can, I was in California when I was a loan officer, maybe we could do a California Fair Plan or something along those lines, which is, you know, a lot less expensive, and we can get you into a home that way because the price will be lower, and that helps with the housing payment. Today, it's probably your only option, number one. And number two, it's also something where we have to factor in. It's going to be a much higher payment than you think. Don't try to make that look lower, because it's going to hurt you in the end when you have to come back and say, that $100 monthly, fire insurance payment I quoted, it's actually $300. And so suddenly you're dealing with, an upset customer, but also maybe dealing with something you can't no longer get approved because your debt to income ratio went up too high.
Well, we're just about out of time. I want to throw a couple last questions at you. So as we're entering the new year, heading into the first quarter, as president there at Panorama Mortgage Group, what are some of your strategic priorities? What is your focus? What are you hoping to accomplish both in the near term and just by this time next year?
I appreciate that question, David. It's been an interesting couple of years for us. We focused the last couple of years just on our foundation. We went from, I think most mortgage companies kind of went through the same thing, right? 21 was, crazy great with production. 22, end of the year, starts slowing down. 23, you kind of have to remold the company into what the industry is now. And there's a lot of, blood, sweat, and tears that comes with that, and you have to adjust. And so, we did. We adjusted, and we made a lot of changes, and a lot of them for the better. One of the things that we've been able to do the last, 12 months or so is really focus on our consumer direct and our wholesale channels. Panorama Mortgage Group has primarily been a retail shop, distributed retail, for the majority of its history. We've toyed with, different, consumer direct models and different wholesale models in the past, but not like we're doing today. And so that was our big focus, building it in 2025, so that 26, 27, and 28, we can focus on really growing it. And so that's where Panorama Mortgage Group is today.
Well, last question. You mentioned kind of coming up through the ranks of the industry to lead to the position that you're at now. So what advice would you give to anyone who's trying to enter the industry, whether they're coming in the same way you did or just generally kind of what's some good advice that you've picked up over the years that you'd like to pass on?
I think the biggest piece of advice I would say is, to keep your head down and keep working. I think a lot of times folks are always looking at, is the grass greener on the other side, and can I get there? And so when you get into, being, loan officer assistant, you're thinking, can I be a loan officer? And being a loan officer is more difficult than they think, so getting into that part, you see a lot of folks that kind of get into it and go, oh boy, did I make a mistake? I want to go back, because, living on commission only is rough also. But, once you figure that part out, it's what do you want to do next? And where do you truly see yourself? And I think a lot of folks see, management in the mortgage industry as, oh man, those guys look like they're just having a good time, and they're not really stressed out about that one loan like I am, or stressed out about that one relationship that like I am. And I'm here to tell all those folks, believe me, I'm stressed out too. There's a lot of different things that go into, being an executive at a mortgage company. And so the advice is, set your sights on where you want to be. What do you enjoy doing, and where you want to be? If you want to be in the community serving the folks, then that's where you should be, because that means you like it, you enjoy it, and you should be doing it. If, you want to be like me and I decided, you know what, I want to be part of a team that accomplishes something together, beyond just, that next loan, I want to build something big, then you focus on that. And so it's just, set your sights on where you want to be and how you want to accomplish it, and then go in that direction. And the only person that can stop you is yourself.
Well, thank you so much for giving us some of your time today, Hector. We really appreciate the insights and the conversation. We've been speaking with Hector Amendola, who's the president of Panorama Mortgage Group. Thank you again for your time, and we'll see you next time on MP Access.